I've been alone with you inside my mind, and in my dreams I've kissed your lips a thousand times. I sometimes see you pass outside my door. Hello.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Time now for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. From Henry Ford Community College. Yeah, we are the all-volunteer, student-staffed, telecom faculty-directed, non-commercial, independent station. And, of course, you can listen to us on the air, 89.3 FM, or from our website, WHFR.fm. Hi, I'm your host, Jay Koronik, and today on our show we will present in its entirety Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr.'s State of the City Address, and that'll be coming up in just a few minutes here, actually just 2 or 3 minutes. Let me just give a little bit of a background to this. After the speech, we will continue with other headline news here in Dearborn, including a brief commentary about the Alternative Energy Summit that's happening on campus today. Again, today is February the 25th, 2011. Mayor O'Reilly's State of the City Address, annual State of the City Address, was done Wednesday night, the 23rd, 2 days ago, was over at the Henry Ford Centennial Library on Michigan Avenue, and that's a new location. They actually were able to quite easily, in fact, fill the Centennial Library auditorium, which is only probably about 120 person capacity at most, and they actually had seats in the lobby, so you could watch it on television from the lobby, 15 feet away from the door. So if you came all the way out there, Now, we announced here on this show last week that it was going to be broadcast live on CDTV, that's City of Dearborn Television, which I think is Channel 12 on Comcast Cable in Dearborn, and Channel 10 on WOW Cable in Dearborn. And it it was not able to be broadcast live, even though reported by the newspapers and yours truly, and I was told directly by the public information officer of the city that it would be broadcast live. But because they decided to include some video footage of a couple of people who were on the, you might say, the budget help committee the last 6 months, Mayor O'Reilly wanted to have, I guess, a little support in person, well, via video, from these several important people who were on the part of the larger committee that met for 6 months making budget recommendations in these difficult times. And so because of those video, as they call them, roll-ins or cutaways, they didn't find it technically possible. I guess they didn't have the right switching equipment or something to go live from the Centennial Library as they expected to do it. Now, I was told by CDTV that it would be edited and its premiere of that video, if you want to see it, the video of it, was going to be last night, February 24th. At 8 p.m. And it'll be on rotation on those two government access channels, as I said, Channel 12 in Comcast Dearborn Systems and 10 in WOW Systems from now on, probably for months it'll be repeated. So call up either Comcast or the city of Dearborn, CDTV, and they probably know the schedule, certainly, and they will tell you when the next broadcast is going to be if you want to see that. But it will be coming up next, right now, as soon as I stop talking, and I'm going to, honest. Of course, this show, as all of our journal shows are podcasts, that is that they're archived on our website, whfr.fm. If you click on the journal button, and if anyone wants to listen to the mayor's speech again, they just fast forward the player that you get when you start to click the download or the stream a couple minutes here, and the speech will be here, so you can listen to it over and over again on the journal archive from today, February 25th, from our website, whfr.fm. And so, as they say, without further ado, here is Mayor O'Reilly starting his speech from February 23rd, 2011.
In the past, we've used this opportunity to report to you about the accomplishments at City Hall or plans to move forward in the coming year. While I'm proud of the great progress we've made in 2010, this year's address will be different because it must serve an even higher purpose. First, it must convince you that our tremendous financial challenges are real. And second, it must convince you that our evolving vision for Dearborn is both desirable and doable. And third, this speech must convince you to support plans to achieve a vision for Dearborn. Now, realizing this vision requires that we balance our revenues and expenditures. That sounds like a simple thing, but as we talk about it, you'll see it's more challenging. That means making uncomfortable, even painful changes to the service mix, raising our financial support, at least temporarily, to pre-recession levels, because it's so important that everyone understand our economic reality, our vision for the future, and our plan to get there, that I'm breaking with another State of the City tradition. If you have any questions about anything you hear tonight, at the end we're going to give cards and you can write them down and I'll take them after the speech. Now, those people who are satisfied and want to leave can, but anybody who still has questions or wants more amplification on a subject, I'm going to stick around and make sure we can talk about it. Now, since I'm trying to get you to be open to the concept of change, I'm going to introduce one more. Periodically during my comments, I will turn to video segments from a discussion I had with three of the subcommittee chairs of our community task force, Ernie Oz, Tim Bracco, and Jane Ahern. Now, I'm hoping their observations will help clarify tonight's vital points. If you don't know the task force members, there are representatives from a wide array of Dearborn businesses and organizations. I put them together in January of last year, and they worked for 9 months, having maybe 15 to 20 meetings of 2 to 3 hours. And I want to thank them for the hard work and learning about our financial issues and options, and even more, for their commitment to process all of those details into recommendations which are now helping us address our financial challenges. Key to addressing them requires that we all work together to reach success. Now, this was a lesson that Ford Motor Company learned, and Tim Bracco from the task force will speak on that.
We've gone through it at Ford, and we've gone through it separately at Ford Land. And without team and collaboration between everybody accepting the vision and dedicating themselves to achieving it, we wouldn't have gotten there. It was painful, but we're starting to see some of the benefits.
Now, we will fail without this support, because as always, you, the residents, the business owners, and the city employees here and at home are the crucial component to our community's success. For me, that success is fundamentally tied to safeguarding your property values, your assets, and your investment in Dearborn. Like we said before, getting there requires accepting reality. So what is our reality? In 4 years, we have lost about one quarter of our revenue, or $25 million, that was dedicated to providing you public services. Think about the dramatic lifestyle changes that would occur in your own family's household if you were to lose 25% of the income you bring in. Partly due to this dramatic loss, we are expecting at least a $20 million deficit in the next fiscal year, if changes are not made now, and $20 million for the next 5 years if the budget continues unaltered. That annual shortfall represents a structural deficit. Now, what does that mean? It means our reduced revenues cannot cover even our essential expenditures we've had for years. The extent of these actual revenue drops is unprecedented and unforeseen by even the best experts. We've been hit by a projected loss of 25% of our taxable property values over a five-year period, a $6 million decrease in state shared revenue, and an anticipated $19 million of revenue loss due to personal property tax changes in Lansing and in the economy. And we have an overall tax system statewide that cannot respond to these new realities. And that's all levels of government, for all levels of government. This extraordinary decline in revenues was shocking for the community task force members.
I think probably the most striking feature of what it was that we learned in the early meetings was just the extent of the financial challenge that's coming up. We were struck, too, and I was struck, too, by the financial magnitude of it initially regarding the deficit. And currently, the amount of work that was done prior to that in the last 10 years or so, there were different, various types of reductions or adjustments or refinances and such that really affected, I think, about $12 million annually. So there was a lot of work already done. And we sat and we looked through all the information, and there was still a $20 million structural deficit. That's probably what struck me the most.
I would concur with Tim as well as with Ernie, the magnitude of the problem. As you know, most of us experienced a 45% cut in our personal wealth, our property taxes, or not our taxes, but our housing values tanked. So that is no different from how cities, municipalities, counties, and states are battling just as difficult of some issues here. And the magnitude really is quite striking.
Expenditures not easily controlled by us are also significantly impacting our structural shortfall. Now, let me give you an idea. I mean, we've changed our healthcare policies. We've made them more contributory with employees. We've gone away from pension plans to 401ks. We've done all the things that you would do as you begin to try and change for the future. But even with those changes, the amount that we have to contribute every year, for example, for a health care contribution and for the existing pensions that were in place long ago, is going up. And to give you an illustration, in 2001, Our pension contribution was 2% of payroll. This year it'll be 50% of payroll. And we have no choice because the actuaries determine what that contribution will be. Now, these spending increases shift money away from delivering the services you expect. There is something else at work as well. It has not been an issue yet, but it is a great challenge. The voter-approved city charter provisions for minimum staffing of police and fire reduce our flexibility to manage our costs. The minimum staffing provisions also put a disproportionate pressure on other essential services we provide. Now again, we're the only city in Michigan that has a minimum staffing for police, and then there are a number of others, not a great number, but a number of others that have it for fire. But let me give you for example. Over the last 10 years, we have estimated, or we have eliminated 168 full-time non-public safety positions. Okay, we're expecting to reduce another 40 this coming July, bringing our total to over 200. That's a 30% loss in our general government employee staffing. These reductions have played a role and an important role in comprehensive efforts to cut our structural costs annually by $12 million up till now. Okay, and if we start looking at the predicament, although we have other limited resources of revenue, we primarily rely on our operating tax revenues, which right now is currently 13.62 mils. Okay, so with a decline in our property values, that tax rate today generates about $48 million a year. But the cost of running, if we were to meet all the thresholds required, the cost of running our police and fire departments alone is about $51 million a year. So that absorbs the entire operating. Now, we aren't at that point because of working with our unions and the generosity they have in not holding our feet to the fire. But it does demonstrate that there is a tremendous amount of capital committed to that. Okay, so if we look at this, we say, okay, how do we go forward? What do we have to do? Well, the problem is that with that kind of exposure, the ability to offer any other services beyond the police and fire becomes really difficult. And that's what we're here to talk about. Now, believe me, we're never going to compromise public safety. But we need to understand that, you know, it's a matter where we've got to look at how can we manage in light of those challenges. And that's what we're going to do. Now, we've had our community surveys. So we've done residential surveys four times since I got on the council. We've also had the task force look at these things. And we just look at common sense. And we know that the most valued characteristic in our community is a high level of public safety. But I'm asking you to understand that it can't be the only characteristic. In fact, not any one character or service can or should define who we are as Dearborn. The attraction of our community has always been its broad appeal. That fact should be foremost in our mind as we deal with these unprecedented times. As citizens of Dearborn, we can't afford, financially or socially, to fight a few favorite services while ignoring the big picture or the large impact on our overall economy. Our task force subcommittee chairs recognize this responsibility.
There's too many examples around the country where cities have gone through similar types of issues and have come out much stronger than when they started. And it all was devoted to people, you know, partnerships between the cities, between the businesses, between the residents. And it's the only way it succeeded. And it wasn't something that was done overnight. And people truly understood the problem. They decided we're going to take the time to make this work. And they were very committed and persevered through that period of time. And eventually it became successful. And there's many examples of that.
Okay. Very shortly, I will be proposing budgets to the council. And I will make solid recommendations about our future on a careful analysis of facts, not in response to emotional appeals. We need to accept that programs will be reduced, delivered in a much different way, or even eliminated. Remember, our current revenue stream can no longer cover even those services sometimes called essential. Since our structural deficit is compounding, if we don't take action this year, the problem will only get worse. And the required remedies will be much more drastic. We will run out of time and options. To assist us this year, I'm introducing a 3-year budgeting process. It will clearly show that if we don't make appropriate cuts or adopt revenue enhancements in year one, our failure will show up even more dramatically in year two and three. The harm caused by not acting now will become very apparent. We know Dearborn is not unique in facing tough choices. The reality is every city, at least in Michigan, is cutting programs and reviewing tax rates. I know all of you here tonight and those watching at home are community-oriented and want the best for Dearborn. But I think we have an even better motivation to be part of the solution. The value of our homes means a lot to us. Even though we don't actually experience a financial loss or gain until we sell a home, it's still important for us to have confidence in the value of what is likely to be one of our biggest investments. Now, if we work together on addressing the challenges as a city, we'll also be working together to recoup the value of our own property. That way, we preserve the potential of our investment represents. And as mayor, I want Dearborn to emerge from these challenges as a community that stands out in the region. Despite fewer resources, I want this city to still be known as a safe, appealing, dynamic place to live, work, and visit. Now, while we'll have to accept that Dearborn will be different than in the past, we'll still promote our quality of life, our parks, our recreation, our green spaces, our visitor attractions, cultural events. We'll also promote our educational institutions like the Henry Ford Community College and U of M Dearborn. We'll continue to be an employment center and a place for industry and innovation. I know some of our friends are here from Severstal Steel, and I've taken tours there, Mike. And it's amazing what's going on there. If they're successful in completing all the projects they have on the drawing board, they will produce a steel that's nowhere else in North America and a steel that will be addressing the needs for lightweight product for the auto industry. So, again, this is being developed right here in our town, and we're very proud of that. And we'll still capitalize on our geographic location within the metro area to promote easy access to the airports, to freeways, to the train station, regional entertainment, sports venues. But most importantly, we'll maintain our competitive advantage because we will still offer you a great value for your tax dollar. So, what are the parameters of our plan to overcome the significant financial challenges and keep Dearborn a city with exceptional qualities within our region? Well, the only way to abolish the $20 million structural shortfall is with a balanced approach. My goal is to address the structural deficit equally with strategic reductions and pursuit of revenue enhancements, including tax rate increase or even a new tax model. Now, this balanced approach also acknowledges that pain must be shared and sacrifices made by residents, property owners, businesses, and city employees. These are unpopular steps, but it's important to remember that we've been making productive cuts for 10 years now. So any of the obvious reductions that come to mind have already occurred. The Community Task Force discovered this in reviewing our options going forward.
We also need to be realistic about the cuts that have happened up until 2011, given how responsible city government has been. So in terms of low-hanging fruit, there is none. So what I'm trying to do is go with the first point of what we're talking about here, which is making sure that you're accepting reality. Yeah. Because I think in order for residents to really get their hands around what our task force recommendations really mean, sugarcoating at this point is not going to get us very far. So I'm just trying to emphasize how responsible City of Dearborn has been, but regardless of how responsible any municipality has been, by any standard, these are very challenging times.
And it continues.
And, you know,
We agree with that. I think it's just a matter of that, seeing that the first time with all the work that you did, so much work being done, so much being saved, the debt deficit still exists, which just tells you it's a long way to go. It's a significant number, and that's what struck us.
Yeah. In light of this challenge, we need to take a harder look at the proper role of government. We have to ask ourselves if we should be providing a particular service or if others are doing it equally as well or even better. We can't afford duplication, and we must pursue partnerships with neighboring cities, with authorities, with whatever makes sense. Because I'm convinced that even the most steadfast Dearborn residents don't really care who's delivering the service as long as that service meets their needs. Unfortunately, even if we are willing to accept cuts, accept different models for service delivery, and accept the shared pain, we still can't conquer that $20 million shortfall with those solutions alone. As you've heard me say several times already, and backed up by the Community Task Force, we must consider in our role the tax rate plays in sustaining our necessary revenue. Now, one solution we're considering is a ballot proposal to raise the operating tax rate following a recommendation of the Community Task Force. Jane Ahern explains the benefits and impact of such a proposal.
The question posed before us is, what do the citizens of the city of Dearborn want? Do we want to keep our services? And if so, what's the price tag on that? And I think the answer coming out of revenue enhancements was, you know, we are very dedicated to our services. So what is the price tag? It must be realistic about that. For our millage, it's currently 13.62. As you know, we're capped at 15 mils through our charter. Now, the state maximum is 20 mils. And so what came out of our recommendations was 18.5 mils. But here's the trick. In 2005 or 2006, those 13.6 mils is essentially the same amount of money as 18.5 mils in 2011 terms. So in essence, it's not really a tax increase. It's just going back to 2005-2006 standards. And I think that's going to be a kind of a trick to communicate and communicate clearly. But certainly the revenue enhancements, we're very mindful of that. In this day and age, I think we really need to think about not a tax increase per se, but an investment in our community moving forward. And I think that in essence, what that will demonstrate is Dearborn's responsibility toward reality and also toward building and continuing to maintain that stability for all future businesses who are strongly considered either moving here or building their business.
Now, before we get to that 3.5 mils Jane references, I'm going to recommend to the City Council that in the next year's budget, we levy the additional 1.38 mils that the voters have already approved in our charter. Now, using the revenue generated by that increase is a responsible and significant move to address our structural deficit. If we later ask or feel the need to ask for a voter-approved additional 3.5 mils or some other number recommended, we would include a sunset provision, making the tax rate increase temporary with an ending date established by law. That would give you, as voters, a powerful tool to hold us accountable, and it would require us to be as sufficient and direct as possible to expediently get rid of that structural deficit. The Community Task Force anticipates an outcome.
An interesting component, too, is that if the things that we're talking about here work, if the investment works, if the administrative efficiencies, the personnel, and the revenue issues all come together sufficiently, then when we get to that sunset provision and we see that that there is a termination and we look at it and say, okay, do we continue the millage? There is a point in time when we don't have to continue the millage for good reasons. So it's all part of, I think what we're looking at here is as much a mindset and a change in how we look at things as it is anything else. The challenge is primarily to change ourselves in the way we do things and in the way we react to them.
Now, with a balanced approach, we must also pursue strategic economic development projects and quality of life enhancements. Now, I know this part may be a little harder to accept because it's natural to ask, well, if we have funds available to invest for tomorrow, why don't we use them today and apply them to the problems we face today? We must look past the immediate financial pressures to also plan for our future. Increasing the number of people coming to Dearborn every day will directly increase investment and property values. The Community Task Force was determined to include this goal.
We need to be willing and to have the courage to say there are things we have to invest in because the return on the investment will make a better future for all of our families, for if we're typical Dearborn people, probably our kids' families and their families, and for our visitors and for our businesses.
Now, we're certainly always open to other options, but our reality demands deliberate actions to realize our vision. The only way to take these steps is with your ongoing support. Now, we've seen the approach that I've outlined tonight be very successful right here in our own backyard. Tim Bracco explains that Ford Motor Company, under Alan Mulally, introduced this process of accepting reality, defining a vision, and forming a plan.
Our main focus was restructuring the business. Initially, we had four parts. You know, we restructured the business, operating profitably. Looking longer term at the plan that you mentioned, Mr. Mayor, was the accelerate the development of our product line. That was our future, which we're starting to see the benefits of now. Financial, absolutely. We had to finance the plan. And then we had to definitely focus on creating the most opportunity, the best balance sheet that we could, an improved balance sheet. And then finally, which captures all three of the above, was working cohesively as a team together, effectively.
I don't want to diminish the pain that was involved. If you ask anyone who works for Ford, they will tell you that much has changed. The company has fewer people and fewer lines of products. But it is also more agile and capable of competing both today and tomorrow in the world market. It took great courage and sacrifice, but we need to acknowledge that the method is working for Ford. Only now, after the change, the company, employees, and shareholders are all seeing the benefit, and the employees, as we know. The same can happen for our city if we're willing to pay the price for success. That means sacrificing some services we may feel very strongly about. It means accepting change as something we critically need. It means putting more of our hard-earned money back into the community as a way to protect our investments. And the good news is we've done similar things in the past and have continued to prosper as a community. And that's really our enduring goal. Not just to eliminate our structural deficit, but to become the Dearborn we want to be for the future. Together, we can make this happen. Shortly, the City Council and I will be coming together to formally develop the plan. We've already accepted that reality, and now we must work collectively on our vision. We must make the decisions, take the steps, bear the sacrifices, and come through the process tested, but still united. Much can change, but if our commitment to one another as neighbors and to our sense of community remains true, I'm confident Dearborn will leverage its powerful potential and continue to be a very special place to live. Thank you.
And that was our recording of the State of the City address from February the 23rd, 2011. And we want to thank Mary Landrosh of Public Information for the City of Dearborn, Mayor O'Reilly, and the CDTV, the City of Dearborn television crew, for letting us have access to the podium and put our recording device up there. I hope you got some important information out of that speech. If you've been listening to the Journal Show over the last couple of weeks, you know that Mayor O'Reilly did a budget presentation with a lot of fantastic charts and graphs that went a little more in depth than this speech. Usually State of the City is just sort of a cheerleading speech, and they don't go too much into detail about anything. This time it was a call to action, a required call to action for the city, and whether it's shared suffering, thank goodness he didn't use that particular phrase, but anyway, I wanted to mention about the Q&A. It went on for about a half an hour after the speech, but there, I didn't think anything substantive came from it. I couldn't record it because the mayor went away from the podium, and can't just jump up there and follow him around with your little pocket recorder while people are doing this. And even CDTV, the wireless mic that he grabbed, in fact, he had two of them. It took about 15 minutes to even get the audio for that. So my suspicion is that even the CDTV broadcast won't include the Q&A unless it includes it after the first 10 minutes or so were lost, because they didn't have any audio. Those of us in the auditorium, of course, could hear everything, but not in terms of the media technology requirements here. I wanted to mention one thing that came up because it was in the papers, and it was reported that Mayor O'Reilly said that they would be considering a city income tax for the first time here in the city. And by the way, I've been joined in the studio by our Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director. So let me say hello to you, Dennis.
Hello.
Hello. Dennis and I both have been covering, and Dennis is going to leave in a little while to help cover some of the afternoon breakout sessions at the 4th Alternative Energy Summit, which is happening here at Henry Ford Community College today. And I'll make a couple of comments about the morning presentations if we have time before the end of this hour. But we'll be reporting more on that next week, probably, you know, more in depth, since we haven't heard the stuff coming up this afternoon, or for the last session this afternoon anyway. So what about that citywide income tax? Well, I thought that the mayor, first of all, said everything's on the table, which means everything is being considered, except in the budget presentation that he gave 3 weeks ago. For an hour, and for his half-hour speech, there was no mention whatsoever of an income tax, a city income tax. But he now, I guess you could say he's on record, at least from the Q&A, and also from a statement apparently made to a Press and Guide reporter, because it was in the paper. So if it's in the paper, it's got to be true, right, Dennis?
That's a true question.
Well, it's on the table. It might be considered. I was interested, and I wasn't aware of this, is that it sounded like someone, like the state of Michigan, has put limitations, a cap, if you will, on how much you can charge for a state income tax. And because the mayor seemed to say we can't do more than 1% and 0.5%. And of course, I got it confused and didn't write it down. Is it 1% for residents of the city on their income, or and 0.5% for non-residents to come in the city but work there? But so they would be the people that, let's say, would come into Dearborn and work here, say, at Ford World Headquarters.
Sure.
They would have to pay that city income tax in the future if there was such an income tax, and it would be a straight percentage. But whether it's 0.5% for residents and 1% for non-residents or vice versa, wasn't clear on that. But that might be required, and the city might go to that, obviously. And I thought I also heard him say is that in an income tax proposal like that, they can't tax pensions, that the city would not tax pensions as income in that proposal. So that's good to all the people on a fixed income in Dearborn.
Sure, they're going to let the state do it, right?
Yeah, right. The state apparently can break whatever rule they set for city income tax, and because Governor Snyder has already proposed 4.25% tax on public pensions. That hasn't happened yet because it has to pass the legislature, but it could happen as early as next budget year, which starts in July. So that's a big hit on some of us. I'm a retired teacher, and I'm on a state pension, and that's several thousand dollars in my case. So what are you going to do, the top story, going back to other information here.
Susan McGraw.
Okay. That's the top story.
No, I just saw our general manager. She was up north this week with her son camping out.
I wouldn't dare say that's old news, because then I might not be joining you each week.
It chokes me up to see her, but but I'm sure they were fighting a lot more snow than we had here at that campsite. So
that just seems funny. Snow and camping just don't go together in my world.
Well, it's a survivalist training, you know.
Yeah.
It's too bad that global warming is causing all this extreme weather.
Yeah.
That happens to be cold and snowy. I think a lot of people wouldn't mind a little warmer in Michigan, but
what the name implies, right?
No, but that's not going to happen, folks, for 50 years or more, even if you don't accept that it was caused by human beings, which the evidence totally, totally shows it is caused by us this time around. The warming trend is quite clear, and it's going to cause all kinds of problems in the next 50 years, worldwide, of course. In the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, and you probably heard about this from other sources, Borders bookstores throughout Michigan, and I think outside the state too, they are filing for bankruptcy, and they're closing many of their stores. They're going to close about, let's see here, they have 200 stores nationwide. And
four in Michigan.
Yeah, and well, we're going to lose the Borders in Dearborn. Up there in the so-called whatever. It used to be the Kmart Power Center, and then Kmart became Walmart, and
right.
So this is a Ford Road.
We just call Mercury just Drive.
West, right? Yeah, north of Mercury Drive there, yes.
And did that surprise you a little bit? It did surprise me.
Well, it is sad, but as pointed out in several analyses, even one done by the financial people at the New York Times, because it got press across the U.S., Borders has been making, ever since they were bought out by Kmart, in fact. And you know how well Kmart's doing, since their power center, they had to sell that. They closed most Kmart stores. There's still one in Dearborn, though, that's open. But they made just terrible business decisions about the future of printed materials. Because of the rise of the internet doesn't mean bookstores should close, but for you know, I'm a magazine junkie, a periodical junkie. I subscribe to a lot, but there's always new ones coming out, and so I used to go to bookstores and spend a lot of time there discovering the new periodicals, the new points of view, the new sources of information, and there's almost no place left to do that. Borders, for the last 10 years, in Dearborn anyway, has been reducing the number of magazines and newspapers that they sell. Well, when you get down to just, you know, People Magazine and Time, and, you know, I can find those anywhere. That's all just mainstream information. Periodicals and magazines, I loved it because you could get in-depth information about a wide, wide range of topics, since there's so many magazines and periodicals still published out there. But you just can't discover them unless you start Googling like crazy different search words into the internet. You just can't find out what they really are. And even if you, I mean, Amazon.com sells magazine subscriptions, but you can't really thoroughly look at the magazine first through that website. You can go to the magazine's website once you got the title and get a taste of it there, but it's just not possible. And of course, I'm not going to pay for an iPad subscription or something like that, because it's like $1 to $5 an issue, and a subscription. I think we brought this up when we interviewed the editor of Car and Driver magazine a few months ago. $8-$10 a year for 12 issues delivered to your door that you can open and peruse and, you know, spend time
and later,
share with your friends. And for example, my favorite magazine, which I can't even find on the newsstand anymore, is a news opinion summary magazine called The Week. Are you aware of that?
Mm-mm, no.
I'll have to bring it in for you then. You know, Time and Newsweek, whenever they publish weekly, and I know Newsweek is barely publishing now,
right,
but they're trying to start back. Their news is always their opinion from their reporters, and it's always a week late. The Week magazine covers the same headline news, but they always, in each article, have three or four points of view expressed by other periodicals, both online sources and New York Times and wherever it was covered. And they always look for the other well-stated point of view. So they have a paragraph or two of different significant ideas for each topic that comes up. Like, what does it mean that there was the, you know, the protest in Egypt and so on? Well, there's many points of view on that, sure. And so the week always looks for multiple points of view, and you know, you can't really do that kind of research yourself. And they always go for really articulate people because they got to pick the key paragraph or two from those other sources. Sure. So it's combining and comparing a wide range of sources in that print magazine, which is no bigger than a Time or a Newsweek. So I highly recommend The Week. It's not liberal or conservative.
No, it's just a combination of material.
It really represents a lot of points of view worldwide, in fact, too.
I like that.
But where are you going to discover that? You know, Borders wasn't even carrying it. For the last 10 years. So I just stumbled across it. I think there was direct mail because I had some other magazine subscription that was news-based. Mm-hmm. They got my name and address from those people, and then I got, you know, it's the usual thing is get an issue or two for free, and if you don't like it, you don't have to continue the subscription.
Okay.
So I get a lot of magazines like that, and then save money by just canceling immediately. You know.
Or, like you just said, when you go to Borders, you can actually buy them per copy before you decide to commit to the subscription.
Or read them there.
Do you know that there's actually the distributors, Borders obviously decides what they're going to buy, mm-hmm. But distributors have the rule that each publication has to be at least X number of pages for the specific reason that people can't mm-hmm. read it. I mean, it makes sense because it's not. If it's too small, they're going to read it. They won't buy it. That makes sense.
Several times I've gone to Borders in the last 5 to 8 years. They don't have the book I want because they've decreased the number of books that they stock, and they don't get as many new books in. And so, what do? Out of frustration, then do I order it and wait 5 days? No, I just grab my iPod Touch, I go online, or my smartphone, whatever I had at the time, and I order from Amazon, and I get it the next day or 2 days later at half the price that they were selling them at Borders. So they just weren't competitive with the electronic bookstores like Amazon.com, but they could have been. They put a ton of money into CD sales.
Oh, absolutely.
Right when it was clear that CD music stores were declining in number, and even though, it was probably still a reason to have one or two around, like Dearborn Music. But, you know, it's really just unbelievable stuff that they made so many bad business decisions in the last 10 years, not keeping up with the direction things were going in the world. I think there's still a great place for a full-service print-oriented store, books, used books, and like John King Books, who are a supporter of WHFR, by the way, in downtown Detroit.
Sure.
Appreciate that very much, Mr. King. He writes personal checks to us. So. And also, that wasn't a commercial, but I'm just saying, we need books because you can read in depth and get information that you can't get any other way. You can't get it on television. They just give you a summary and a couple of pictures. You don't really know enough to even make a logical argument about anything. And maybe this is Glenn Beck's story. He's had to apologize recently for his last flap about comparing, Reformed Jews with radical Islamic groups?
Right.
Yeah. So he's apologized for that one.
Oh, that's good.
And he just said, I was ignorant. I don't have time to do the research. Well, duh.
Yeah.
You know, those of us that care about one issue or another, whether it's ecology or science or, if you should try to read a book every week or two, get it from the public library as long as they still exist.
Well, no, and you bring up a good point. This has become, the bookstores, not Amazon, but Borders Included said that we're going to go more digital with their format. Libraries do the same thing. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're going to go in that direction and create that trend because you're cutting back, of course that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, no, you're exactly right. But the Borders in, there's one in Taylor that's going to stay open.
It's going to stay open. I couldn't figure that Taylor stays open, but not Dearborn.
That's confusing because it's in a mall, maybe. Do you think?
That could be. Although Fairlane Mall has no bookstore anymore. There was a Walden Books, and that closed a couple years ago.
Yep.
I can't imagine not having bookstores around. But if all they're going to do is have, a dozen or so of the most popular magazines that are already at your grocery store, why would people want to go there?
That's a really good point.
They go there for special things they can't get anywhere else. That's why you have a bookstore, and especially with periodicals and magazines, which are shorter, easier to read, more up-to-date. A book takes a year or two to write and publish and get on the newsstands, and magazines have less lead time, and you can read the articles over and over again to understand them. You know, it's not like online where it's there, and unless you print out 30 pages or something on your printer, you won't have it. You just got it in the back of your head, but you'll probably forget most of it.
True.
Borders also made an incursion into having a website, and then that was a disaster. They didn't know how to manage that, and they backed off, and then they gave their sales, they somehow related to Amazon for it. Well, Amazon, that's your competition, you know. And then they tried to start it up again, apparently recently, and that was a disaster. So they just made a lot of very, very basic bad decisions. I don't think they had people that understood print material and print selling at all.
Right.
You know, and it's too bad.
But they've made the same bad decisions with their e-readers in the digital field. Yeah. I mean, and Amazon, whether people like them or not, they seem to be making good decisions, you know?
By the way, Barnes & Noble, not to play favorites here, I'll say a few negative things about them. They don't have much selection either. They have a store in the Allen Park shopping strips down there, and they have very poor selection for magazines. In fact, I've talked to the manager there and criticized him. Like, well, we just can't sell all those magazines.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, gee whiz. I said, well, I'm not coming back then. You know, you lose my potential business as a drop-in if you're not going to have the magazines I want to see and consider and new magazine. You know, and the depth of books. It's true. I'm a college-educated person, two master's degrees. I've already read a lot of books, and so the usual books I don't need to read anymore, but I need to know the latest things and the in-depth things, and I can't get those even from Barnes & Noble. The only thing that Barnes & Noble does good in some locations, but not in Allen Park, is their used book sections. They have, like, Barnes & Noble discount or warehouse stores in different places, and those are great deals where you can get a big time book for just a couple bucks. I go online and I get a mailer from Edward R. Hamilton. Sorry, John King, but Hamilton is a bookstore that does remandering, which is they take the books that can't sell and they reduce the price to almost nothing, a dollar or two for a $25 book,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's a year old or something.
Fine.
And I just love that.
Yeah.
Just buy that book, and I like turning the pages at my own leisurely pace, and I don't know where my battery's running out, or, you know.
Hey, do you know if the Borders, wasn't there a Borders Express in Dearborn Heights?
They said three Borders Express are going to continue, and I can't imagine what their stock would be like.
I was not impressed.
Oh, you've been there somewhere.
Oh, the one in Dearborn, it used to be in the Heights, and I don't know if they're keeping that one. You know, the Heights is that the shopping center over there in Dearborn Heights.
Right.
No, it was just their top sellers. It was if you want something, you want the latest Grisham or the latest King or whatever, you know.
Yeah, well, that's not my idea of a good bookstore, but I existed when the first Borders began in Ann Arbor and was quite unique. Dennis is going to talk about something here. I'm going to get the phone. So, okay. Dennis?
Okay. Well, I'm just going to talk about...
What about the Henry Ford Center renovations? The mayor talked about money that's going to be put in to improve things. This is on 1A of the Times-Herald. So they're already making renovations because they think they're going to get more money.
Well, that's the plan, isn't it? When you make reservations, you think that remodeling creates enough change that people will flock to. I've seen that a few times where, like, our new updated version, and all they did was throw a little bit of paint on the walls, and that qualified as new renovations.
They had to add more bathrooms. When they have special events in some of the large facilities there, some of the large rooms, there's not enough space for all the people that need to go to the bathroom at times.
Okay.
There's no negative comment about senior citizens, but they've had to add more bathrooms. And I always wonder, why didn't they have more major events there at the center, like a Comic-Con, or they used to have Star Trek conventions at the old one, or the Gem Show? Those have all gone to other facilities, either Southfield or Troy or Novi. What's wrong with the center? Are they charging too much money to rent?
Are you talking
or they just don't have enough bathrooms?
They do that at the Hyatt now, don't they? Where they had a few over the Halloween holiday. It wasn't Comic-Con. It was like a zombie walk. Do you remember all that? And they had the actual... Jay's like, no, of course not. They were trying to do the world's... they're breaking a record for the most zombies walking. I mean, they were going to walk from Henry Ford Community College to Fairlane, but there was a traffic issue that it would stop traffic, so they decided not to do that. You don't remember any of this?
No, and you wonder why even the Hyatt is having tough times.
You know what? The one thing that's difficult for me to get used to,
too.
I drove past northeast corner of Fairlane Town Center, and the Ritz-Carlton sign is gone, and it's now just called The Henry. And it just seemed it just seemed so different to me.
It's been Ritz for so long. The former wasn't a Ramada. It was
Marriott.
No, on Michigan Avenue, the little hotel there next to the railroad.
Well, it used to be a Hampton.
Hampton, mm-hmm. right? And that was sold, and that's now some sort of name spin about Fairlane Village, West Village Hotel now or something. And
yeah.
It's it all blends together, you know, but good luck to them, of course.
Well, you know, there's talk, you were just talking about Barnes & Nobles and that whole area there in Allen Park. There's a hotel slated to go up there, too. And that leaves me scratching my head, you know, whatever.
I have an editorial comment. You know, all the opinions expressed in the show, even by Mayor O'Reilly, are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. And it's about his State of the City address, which you heard earlier. And, you know, I've said this for years, and people always tell me what an idiot I am, but as long as I have a job or a steady pension, I'm in favor of more local taxes. I'm not so sure about money to the state or federal government, but the money best spent, that is the least chance for it to be spent in strange ways or corrupt ways, the most bang for the buck, in other words, the least overhead added because of going through so many different administrative hands, is money spent locally. And of course, education, I think we should have the best possible education that we can afford to give. And right now, even in Dearborn, we're not putting that money in. Now, the trouble is, as Jim Schoolmaster, president of the Dearborn Board of Ed, said, right now, whatever money we collect, including the extra supplement that we voted to give to our schools, it goes to the state. And as he said, we're only getting, how much was it, 60% back?
No.
Or less.
Yeah, no, 60.
In terms
right.
of the funding.
60-40, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, kind of trapped here. We can't even vote to give more money to the schools because the state's going to keep it or keep more of it. And as he said, of course, the reason we have the system is so that the poorer districts that don't have as many people to tax in outlying Michigan, that their schools can have the same amount of funding per student approximately right. across the state. And I understand that, and that's a noble purpose, so that all of the children of Michigan can have a similar level of quality education. But in Dearborn, you know, we can't even pass an extra millage because it's just going to go to the state, and we probably won't even get it back. So it's really, really a major dilemma. But I'm in favor of more taxes and more millage, as the mayor is talking about, if it'll keep the city on an even keel. We can talk about what services should be cut or not. For example, we had another 3 inches of snow today mm-hmm. and this morning, and the city comes down and plows again my street. Thank you very much. I didn't need it. So there's now 9 inches at the end of my drive that I've got to plow through in order to get out. And luckily I have a big SUV. We don't need to, I'm sorry, folks, we could save a ton of money just on snow plowing by saying, unless it's at least 8 inches or 10 inches, the city's not going to plow. The average car, if they don't have to go over that big bump at the bottom of your driveway caused by the plow coming in and putting it all the extra snow there, you can get through. You can get through with 3 to 6 inches of snow. You may be a little scared because it looks like it's up to, covering the bottom of your tires, but you don't need to have that as much. Now, other people said, oh, I want that plow all the time, every hour. The pools are another question. I don't use the pools, although I will say that my daughter and granddaughter this morning, since my daughter had this week off, sort of the spring break at Southfield Public Schools, and so they went over to the center and they swam. I mean, it's freezing cold outside, and they're in there swimming. But wonderful resource. They always have water in the pool. So whether people swim or not, it costs the same amount of money to the city. So we might as well make use of that. And it was only like she didn't even buy the monthly thing. She said, well, it's just a couple bucks a day.
And it's like,
it's $5 a day even. She says, it's so inexpensive, and you can be there for hours just getting that day pass.
But it's not just a pool. That's the cool thing for kids.
There's other things to
do. It's an actual little water thing. Yeah. There's like whatever. Do you know that, back to the schools, you know that the city of Detroit, based on after Schneider spoke, they're looking at closing 70 schools, 60 mm-hmm. to 70 schools.
Yep.
And I think that will bring the class size, the average class size. You ready for this? 60 students mm-hmm. in a classroom.
Yeah, that's not workable, folks. I mean, I don't even know what kind of classroom size they have, but Henry Ford Community, except for a lecture hall, we've only got about a dozen lecture halls on campus that can seat 100 or more.
Right.
That's just not good for education at any level. It's just not good. Most people think, well, 30 or 40, we've heard about that, mm-hmm. and that's a big class. 60? They're not going to get education. Well, I'll give them all a computer. Well, they can't afford to give them all a computer, and even with computers, who's going to train them to use them?
Right.
You know, what kind of staff are you going to use for that? They don't have the money to put the extra technology in, and... You know, as Jim Schoolmaster said, well, maybe we need to go to like senior year. Well, he didn't say senior year. Maybe we need to go to more online instruction in the high schools.
Interesting.
To save money. Well, Detroit can't do it because they don't even have the computers. They don't have the technology, the servers, the other resources to even do that. But they have a lot of people who can't even read well. If you can't read well, you're not going to do well in an online course because there's all that text on the screen.
Right.
And there's a textbook you got to read on top of it, absolutely. Physical textbook you have to get. In most cases, and so only the highest motivated and those that already have superior reading and writing skills, or better than average reading and writing skills, are going to find online instruction successful for them as a learning experience.
Plus, without the instructor right there, you have to wonder, you know, that may give the kids a lot of latitude and not as much discipline. I mean, that would leave it up to the kids either to be self-motivated or the parents to say, hey, look, you have an assignment due, don't you? Do you follow me? If you're at least you're physically going to a classroom, the chances you're showing up, so the chances of getting an education are better than if you're sitting in front of a computer and not doing your work.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're coming to the top of the hour here on the new WHFR Journal. It's WHFR Dearborn. And Dennis is going to slide away to the Alternative Energy Summit. And I'm just going to cover briefly. I know our podcast recording goes off in 2 minutes approximately. And Joanne Kurczynska has arrived. And so Highway 61 will start in just a moment or two. We had presentations this morning on campus here at Henry Ford Community College at the Alternative Energy Summit from Matt Roush, who is the Great Lakes IT report writer. He has a newsletter online that gives people, you have to subscribe to it. Maybe there's a print version too. The most up-to-date information about what's happening in business and industry in where the jobs are in the new green entrepreneurship area. So new businesses for Michigan and new potential jobs too. And he's also, Matt Roush is at WWJ News Radio. We heard from Chuck Conlon, who's from DTE. It seems he's the guy at DTE that's not involved in the coal plants or the atomic energy plant in Monroe, the Fermi plant, Fermi 2. He's the fellow there. Is he a VP? Well, whatever. He's the one that is concerned about renewable energy resources and special programs to get people to conserve too, as well as try to create wind farms and solar farms of electricity that can feed back into the DTE electrical grid. So that was an amazing presentation, even though I'm always suspicious of DTE as a near almost veritable monopoly on gas and electricity in Michigan. You know, what they said.